This time, the kindergarten through third grade kids are released to go to their class, and their leader is in the back there. So that is the next thing coming. Take me just a second to get set up here. Thank you, Roger. That was really something. Question for you. Do you ever wonder, as you look at couples, how on earth they ever got together? What possible circumstances were woven together that ignited that spark between them? Yeah. I mean, what is it that attracted them to each other? Sometimes I'm just not seeing it, you know. But they obviously did. Some people go about looking for a mate in a very orderly, methodical way, as this man did in his ad in the Palo Alto Times. John R. Doe Jr. wants to begin life at 50 with a new wife, begin life again at 50. A new wife who will bear him 6 children. He has placed a display advertisement in the Palo Alto Times scheduled to begin running next week, listing his qualifications. Doe's requirements for the ideal wife are age between 22 and 35, slim athletic body, able to play tennis, golf, jog and dance, a Christian who loves children, a non-smoker and non-drinker, a person vitally into good nutrition. Doe will include his telephone number in the advertisement so that the wife candidates can phone him, noting that we can talk it over and they will know what I am searching for. Like, anybody want the number? Likely choices will be invited for a personal interview at his home. Doe declared that the woman's sweetness will be the determining factor in whether he selects her, although, of course, she must meet the other criteria. This guy leaves nothing to chance. Now, that might be a good way to find a secretary, but it sucks the life right out of a relationship before it even gets going. It is like, oh, man. Now, other people take the opposite approach. They are more like tarantulas in their dating. Hang with me. I'm told that tarantulas don't actually go out looking for a mate, maybe because of their poor eyesight, they think, but that they just happen to kind of bump into each other along the way. And once they do happen to meet, it's actually pretty risky, because each type of tarantula can only mate with the same type of tarantula. And the way they can tell each other apart is because each variety of tarantula has a very unique and specific mating dance. And so the male has to do this very complex tap dance. And if the female doesn't recognize all of his moves, she kills him. Maybe that's why the male doesn't go out and look for a mate. He doesn't know if he finds one, if she's going to kiss him or eat him. Yeah, just. Well, today we want to look at a story that tells us about two people who just happen to bump into each other in a barley field. But the closer we look, the more we can see that it was not just careful planning or blind chance. It was something that God actually orchestrated himself, mostly unbeknownst to them. We find the story in Ruth chapter 2. And if you want to turn there, that would be a good idea. Right away in the story, we're given some information. We get the information that the characters in the story didn't have. Verse 1 says, "Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz." Now we, the readers, are given this little insight that Boaz is a kinsman of Naomi's on her husband's side. Now, that might not mean a whole lot to us, but to the Jewish reader, that would be a signal that to kind of be on the alert, because this would actually qualify Boaz to step in and redeem the poverty, redeem the property, of these two, which they would obviously be losing or have lost, and also relieve their poverty. He was qualified to do that. And we want to talk a little bit more about this idea of the kinsman redeemer a little bit later. But when they discover who Boaz really is, you start to see some of the really neat relationship that could happen there. But right now in the story, they don't know that. They don't know that that's who he is. Another thing we're told here is that Boaz is a man of standing. Some translations actually say a mighty man of wealth, like the King James Version says that. Another one says a man of great wealth. But it also means that he is a very well-respected man, and that's why some will translate it. He's a man of standing. These two details given about Boaz let us know that he's actually qualified on two counts to rescue Naomi and Ruth. Not only is he a relative, but he also has the wealth and the power and the status to do what needs to be done. We get that information, or at least the Jewish reader would get that right from that first little bit. The author mentions Boaz, I think, at the beginning of the story to let us know right away that we ought to be viewing this story from God's perspective. It's a clue that something's going to happen. God is doing something, because they just showed up to glean and don't know that this is who is there. God is at work behind the scenes, bringing these two together, Ruth and Boaz, in order to accomplish his purposes, not just in their lives, but in the whole world as well. Ruth and Boaz are just going through life, making little decisions that individually might even not seem that important, but each little decision, each word spoken, and each of the actions that they take all kind of fit together to weave this tapestry that God is making. And I hope you'll see that as we go further into the story. Verse 2 begins the story of how these two meet. Verse 2, "And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Let me go into the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.' Naomi said to her, 'Go ahead, my daughter.' So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters." Now, when Ruth goes out to glean in other people's fields, you might want to kind of put your own culture on check here. She's not going out to rip them off. She's not going out to trespass and steal grain. She's actually acting on a provision that God had made in the Old Testament law. In Leviticus 19, verses 9 to 10, the Lord had said to the nation of Israel, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God." This was God's welfare program. But the difference between his program and ours is that the people were actually expected to work for what they received. Just saying. They had to go out and glean the fields, and whatever they worked for, they got to keep legally. And that could be a full day's work, as we're going to see in the story that it actually is. And that is God's way of caring for his creatures. It provides for them, but at the same time allows them to restore some dignity because they're actually working for something. So that's kind of cool. Now, being a gleaner could actually be a dangerous occupation. If someone didn't want you to glean, they weren't following God's law, then they could chase you off, they could attack you, abuse you, even kill you. And it would be even more dangerous in a time of famine like this is here, where there's just not that much to go around. Food was scarce. And so even though God's law said that it was okay to glean, and even though he commanded the landowners to allow people to glean, not all of the landowners obeyed the law. So Ruth knows here that she needs to find favor in the eyes of a landowner in order to do this. She didn't say that flippantly. She really needed that for her own safety. Now, the next thing that just kind of happens in the story is really a key ingredient in the whole story. Look at the latter part of verse 3. It says, "As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech." Now, Elimelech was Naomi's former husband, so he is a relative, right? We're told, though, here that Ruth happened to come upon the field of Boaz. It says it turned out that she found herself in his field. A more literal translation of this from the Hebrew would say her chance chanced upon the fields of Boaz. Now, we don't talk about that, but you get that. It's sort of like double luck, right? From the human standpoint, it was lucky. It was an accident. Ruth had apparently never heard of Boaz until this time, and she just happened upon his field. But the author is piecing together a story here about the power of God to accomplish his purposes and bring his people into his will. More about that in just a little bit. As Ruth is gleaning in the field, Boaz the boss comes by. Verse 4 says, "Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. 'The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you,' they called back." So he says, "The Lord be with you," and they say, "The Lord bless you." First thing Boaz does, he greets his workers with a blessing. He didn't come and say, "Get off your duffs and get to work. You haven't brought in enough for today." He says, "The Lord be with you." He seems to care more about the workers than he does about their production. The first thing he wants for them to have is the blessing of God on their lives. That is so refreshing and just shows the character of this guy. He's the boss. He's the one with the money, the power, the food, and these people are working for him. And yet he doesn't treat them like lesser people at all. He honors them, he treats them with respect, and he wishes them the very best. The Lord be with you. What a great example for leaders and managers to have that attitude. Notice, though, that the workers also return the blessing. They say, "The Lord bless you." They desire that God will bless their boss. That's the kind of place I'd want to work. If our corporate leaders and workers both had this kind of an attitude, there wouldn't be any need for strikes, for unions, even rifts between management and workers. If everybody was out to have God bless that person and was working toward the blessing of the other one in a kind of a mutually productive endeavor, that would be really great. And it's not a bad idea to ask yourself how you're doing in this area, whether you're a boss or a manager or a worker, or you're hiring someone to work on your house or in your garden or work on your car, the guy that does your mechanical work. How do you treat them? You might be surprised to see what God can do when people who work together have this kind of an attitude. It's a whole different world. Next, in verses 5 to 7, Boaz notices, after he's greeted the workers, he notices a newcomer. Verse 5, Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" Ruth, right? Mm-hmm. Now, a selfish businessman who was only interested in production wouldn't pay much attention to the gleaners at all. In fact, he might even resent having them there because they're actually, you know, getting the fruits of his labor. But Boaz notices this new gleaner there, so he asks questions about her. And I have to say, I really don't think it was so much because she was any kind of physically attractive at this point. She probably had her headpiece wrapped as a veil over her face somehow because she's working outside, and she's in her work clothes, which, because she was in abject poverty, probably were pretty ragged. She might have even been super sweaty and dirty, and because of all of the hard work in the fields and chaff all over her, that kind of stuff. So I really don't think he is saying, "Whoa, who is that?" I just think he's going, "That's somebody I haven't noticed before. Who is that?" Right? I think he actually noticed her because he was a caring person and even noticed the lowly people in his circle. And what a great example I think that is to us. How do we treat the servant people in our lives? How do we treat the cashiers, the plumbers, the waiters and waitresses, and other people who serve us? Sometimes in restaurants, I just see people just acting like they are kings and queens, and the people that are there are just like this necessary evil. You know, how many times do you engage with the person just to have a little bit of humanity between you and them and honor them because they are working hard for not a lot, a lot of the times? Do we really care about them? Do we take the time to desire God's best in their life? Or do we even notice them? Good to ask. Boaz did. He was the boss, and yet he wasn't afraid to encourage his workers and to relate to them. And they responded when he was wishing God's best for them. They responded in the same very way. "The Lord be with you. May God prosper you, and let me do whatever I can to make that happen." It just seems like that's what it was doing. A man who cares for the people who work for him is probably going to have people who are enthusiastic to be there. It worked for Boaz, and because he had that attitude toward all of the people, he was able even to notice Ruth, who was at the bottom of the bottom in on the people poll. So look at verse 6. The foreman replied, this is after he asks about Ruth, the foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So now at least Boaz knows who Ruth is, right? She is a Moabitess who came back with Naomi. So the next thing you see here about Boaz is that not only does he treat his workers with grace, like I was talking about, but and notice Ruth, but he also then immediately wants to provide for Ruth. It comes out in verses 8 through 16, just after he finds out who she is. Verse 8, "So Boaz said to Ruth, 'My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" So not only is she a gleaner, but she's a Moabitess. She's a foreigner. And you see her just bowing down. Boaz replied, verse 11, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." This is so beautiful. Ruth says, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." So Boaz had heard about Ruth, but hadn't met her or seen her. Once he meets her, he gets right down to taking care of her. In verse 14, the scene switches to lunchtime, where you see this. And Boaz ends up being even more generous. And here's where you get a little hint of kind of a special attraction that may be going on between them. Verse 14, "At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come over here. Have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar.' When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, 'Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her.'" So, you know, they just weren't supposed to go back through whatever fell they were supposed to leave, but he's saying just kind of like, you know, just sort of drop a little extra. Isn't that something? Boaz is obviously very interested in Ruth, and so he makes sure that his men don't bother her, and that they even leave extra for her so that she can pick it up. It's obvious at this point he wants to keep this girl around, right? That's about all you know so far. So I'd like to back up for just a minute, though, and look at Ruth's response to Boaz. Verse 10 said that she bowed down her face to the ground and exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, a foreigner?" Her attitude toward herself in all of this is not like, "Yep, law says you got to take care of me." It's unworthiness. She's just saying, "Why would you even notice me, a foreigner? I'm not even like at the bottom of your totem pole of servants. I'm below that." But Boaz doesn't make her feel that way at all. He didn't say, "Yeah, well, you know, I'm just kind of a generous guy. All the chicks dig me for that." He made her feel worthy and deserving of everything that he gave her because of her selfless attitude toward Naomi. That's what he had heard about. In verses 17 to 23, we have Ruth going back after work reporting to Naomi. "So Ruth gleaned in the field," verse 17, "until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough." An ephah, by the way, is about 3/5 of a bushel, over 5 gallons. Think of a heaping Home Depot bucket or something. You know, it's a lot of grain. And that was many times more than a hired worker would earn for his gleaning. The average worker would get a ration of 1 to 2 pounds of grain a day. And here Ruth is getting, depending, it could have been even up to 50 pounds, you know, 35 to 50 pounds. It's multiples more than you would think. But not only that, verse 18 tells us that she also brought a doggy bag back for Naomi. It says she brought it out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. So she was given an abundance. And there's a lesson here that we might want to think about, and that is that we get by grace so much more than we could ever earn by works. Isn't that something? You see this kinsman redeemer, which we don't know that yet in the story, giving more than you could ever get if you earned it, giving it to somebody that doesn't really, in her estimation especially, deserve it. Really cool. Look at Naomi's reaction when Ruth does this. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked for today is Boaz," she said. Verse 20, "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.' He invited me to stick around until harvest is over." Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field, you might be harmed." Here, remember I talking about the danger? So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, this is the first time in the story you see Naomi perk up. You catch that? She's pretty puddle glum up to this time. She's pretty bad. The first time she sees, though, that God is providing for them, and her counsel is very wise. Stay in the fields of this guy. Maybe the most important thing that Naomi learned on this day was that Boaz was a goel, a kinsman redeemer. This meant, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, he was qualified to help him out permanently if he was willing to do so. In the Old Testament law, it was stated that if a man died, his brother or another close relative was supposed to step in and redeem the widow. The list of the kinsman redeemer's duties goes something like this. He's supposed to avenge the death of a murdered relative. If the guy was killed by somebody else, he was to avenge that death. Marry a childless widow. So he was to marry his brother's wife. To buy back land that had been sold. To buy back a family member who had maybe been sold as a slave. And also to look after the needy and helpless members of the family. The kinsman redeemer's role gives us a pretty good picture of what our Redeemer came to do for us, doesn't it? And after we get through the four, I'm not going to get into that a whole lot today, but after we go through these four chapters, I want to take at least one whole session and just look back through the book at the pictures that we get of our kinsman Redeemer. And I think that's going to be really fun. But anyway, this discovery is just a wonderful thing for Naomi and Ruth. Not only is Boaz a kind, caring man, but he's also qualified to marry Ruth and take care of Naomi. And Lord willing, we're going to see how that plays out in the next couple of weeks. But before we leave the story today, I think there's some practical lessons for us that I'd like for us just to think about. Like I said, on the surface, it just looks like these two just kind of bumped into each other in the field. But looking at the story from the divine perspective, Ruth had to meet Boaz. He was the person for her. But nowhere in the story Does it say that God led her directly or spoke to her in any way? And that's my point. And yet she ends up exactly where she needs to be. You might even say that she kind of bumped into God's will as she went about her life. And that brings up the question, how does God lead us along the path that he wants us to go? How do we find God's will for us and end up where we're supposed to end up? Today, I know it's very common for people to say, God told me this or that. I've even had them tell me something that God told them to do or gave them permission to do that I know he would not give them permission to do. But because they thought they heard his voice, that trumped everything that God has ever written in all of, yeah. Or they'll just say, I know God wants me to do this. And I'm just sometimes kind of suspicious of that. I don't just go, oh, great, that's wonderful, and just start nodding. Kind of like I sort of want to hold back a little bit. I have a little bit of a hard time believing it because I don't think that's the way that God normally, commonly leads us. Sure, you know, he might do it on occasion, and some of you have had that kind of an experience, of course, but more often than not, he leads in much more subtle ways as we go about our lives just walking with him on a day-to-day basis. A lot of times that's the way it happened. And that's the way it happened to Ruth and Boaz here. I think they were just doing what they knew to be right, and as a result, they found each other and they found God's will for their lives. They were not just lucky. I can remember my photography professor saying that some people think that good photographs are just a matter of luck. And he said, but it's been my observation that good photographers get lucky a lot more than others. And the reason they do is because they understand the practice and they practice the fundamentals of good photography. They know how to look for how the light falls. They know how to unclutter the background. They know how to compose a picture. They have their cameras ready and they know how to use the camera. And so when the opportunity comes, because they have followed the basics of good photography, they're ready to discover the picture. And that stuck with me all these years. They pay attention to the basics, and that's why they happen to get good pictures. Now, with that in mind, let's take a look at how Ruth kind of bumped into God's will. There were several basic things that she was doing that actually put her in a position to discover God's will. First of all, she was focused on caring for others. Who was she caring for? Naomi. Yeah, remember, she just gave up everything and just said, I'm going with you, and she's just taking care of Naomi. All the way through the story, you see that her concern was on meeting Naomi's needs. She was basically losing her life for the sake of others, and as a result, God caused her to find her life and her calling. Secondly, she walked in obedience to the revealed will of God. God's word said she could glean. That was something she could do. And so she didn't just sit and say, oh God, please send manna. You know, give me a grocery bag on the doorstep tomorrow morning. No, she knew there was something she could do. God had given permission for her to do that. And so she just went out and did it. So many times we want God to give us a specific command that we can hear, but we aren't really responding to the things that we already know that he wants us to do. If you want to discover his will for your life, start responding to the things that he's already revealed to you in his word. That's how he usually speaks to us and guides us. He tends to steer a moving vessel that's moving in the right direction already. And yes, there are times when it's just so definite, you have that strong impression that it is God speaking, but that usually happens, if it's really God, it usually happens to people who are walking with him. Third thing that Ruth did to put herself in a position to discover God's will is that she took the initiative. She didn't sit around every day and just say, boy, I wish God would do something for me. I can't do anything. No, she said, I think I'll go out and work. Here's a novel thought. And when she did that, you see the fourth thing. And that is that when she did go out and work, she showed diligence. She didn't just mope around wishing she had a real job, like, yeah, I'm holding out for a management position, so I really don't want to glean much this week, you know. She did her best at the lowest job that she could get and just did it with all her heart. And, you know, it really did work out. It wasn't long, though, before word got back to Boaz that she was a good and faithful worker, and that's when the promotions came. Kind of a bit of a jump from a poverty-stricken foreign gleaner to wife of the landowner, right? But if you want to be entrusted with more responsibility in your career or your ministry or your life, one of the best ways to begin on that path is by giving your whole heart to the job that God has already given you right now. In Colossians 3:23, it says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. So whatever job you have, you realize, even if it's a bad boss or whatever, that you're really working for the Lord and the inheritance ultimately comes from him. So that's an important part. A fifth thing is that she showed humility. There's a novel thought. She didn't have the attitude that God or Boaz owed it to her, even though the law said that she could glean. She didn't expect every day that she went to the field to get an attendance award, like for just showing up. She just humbled herself and allowed God to do the blessing. And so many times we think that we deserve better than what we're getting, when really, technically, we don't. Technically, every single one of us deserves God's wrath. If you really got what you deserved, it would not be good. But that would be fair. And yet, he does bless us in so many ways every single day. And we kind of need to keep that before us, that humble attitude instead of an entitled attitude. So I want to look now at just a little bit of a shift, how Boaz bumped into God's will here. First of all, you're going to notice that he was definitely walking with God. You can tell that by the way he greeted his men, "The Lord be with you." His focus was in the right place. Secondly, he was walking in obedience to the revealed will of God. Because of God's command in his word, he allowed the gleaners into his field. Thirdly, he's focused on the needs of others. He said to his men, "The Lord be with you," not, "God is blessing me so much. In my devotions this morning, he told me how holy I was." No, his focus on other people, folk, and on their needs. And as he saw the plight of Ruth, he made sure that she was cared for. He was on a mission to make sure she had everything that she needed, even though it cost him something. And as he focused on others' needs, God took care of him, brought the right information to him, and God accomplished his will. As Boaz and Ruth go through this, they just paid attention to walking with God and doing what they knew they could do and should do in the moment, and that put them in a position where they could interpret and respond and find God's larger will for their lives. That is the point of the story, and that's where we're going to leave it today. Someday, I think when we get to heaven, we may see a video of our lives, and we will like parts of it. But I think as we do, we're going to see our life story completely differently than we see it or would tell it now. We're going to get to see that conversations and small decisions and happenstance meetings actually that seemed so unimportant to us in the moment actually led to a very important outcome. We'll know then that the bigger story was being played out, and we'll know the whole story and see God's invisible hands and maybe even recognize his fingerprints on things that we had no idea. Even like, you know, if you got punched in the nose as a second grader, you might find out just exactly what God was doing. They're building something into you for many years down the road. I think that that's going to be kind of fun to see his hand woven through our lives. But the thing that we need to believe right now is that God already knows the end of the story today, and he already has that broad perspective on our lives. And some of those things that we think are absolutely devastating tragedies, he already knows how he's going to turn that thing on its head and use it to strengthen us and bless us down the road. And we need to understand that he is busy in every single life orchestrating things right now. And our task then right now is just to be good at the basics of walking with him and trust him to then open the right doors for us at the right time and to give us wisdom to make the right decisions about walking through those doors, that little prompt that we might need to be active and even diligent and all of that. And I think that as we're doing that, as we're good at the basics, as we get better and better at that, and we're responding to him and asking him for wisdom along the way, and he's giving that to us, I think that's when he begins to roll back the curtain and show us what he has planned for our lives. And that's when he opens the doors to a career sometimes. That's when he brings that special person into your life to go through life with you. And that's when he shows you maybe the ministry that he wants you to have in the body of Christ. And I think that's what happened with Ruth and Boaz. And I think that's the most common way that God causes it to happen to us. There are exceptions, of course, but I think we need to pay attention to the basics of just walk with him in the light that he's already given you, the things you know to be true, and trust him to guide you along the way. We're going to close in prayer today, but I want to do this a little bit different. I'm going to call Roger up, and we did a song a little bit ago, Step by Step. I would like for us to stand and sing that song together as our closing prayer, and then I'll just dismiss us after that. But would you just stand and let's pray this next song.